Welcome to Misconnections. We're both Elizabeth. I'm Elizabeth Villa, aka Lizzie.
And I'm Elizabeth Windham, aka Beth.
Misconnections is a podcast that explores our longing to connect and the circumstances that stand in our way.
Each episode will bring a true story of a missed connection and an expert guest to help us unpack the themes of the story so that we all can get better at making real, meaningful connections that feel good to us.
That's why we started this show. After a series of our own misconnections in dating, friendships, and family relationships, we decided to get some help.
Good news, you've stumbled upon a different type of episode where we're bringing you more voices, more perspectives, and expanding upon conversations we get to have around connection.
That's right. You're in for a Misconnections Mini.
In a recent episode, we had Rick Jackson, a licensed marriage and family therapist providing services at LaVie Counseling Center, on the podcast to talk with us on how we can go about creating new forms of communication and changing behavior in our relationships. And boy, did we learn some things.
We really did. It felt like I was in therapy, which, as you know, I love.
Lizzie, I was ready for an intensive and I wanted to talk to him for just a few more hours.
Yeah, and so we are about to, basically. After we stopped recording, Rick showed us the disconnection versus connection handout he created and mentioned in our conversation. The handout was a really rich tool for illustrating the ways we communicate and how they can move us toward connection or disconnection. So we immediately agreed we needed to have Rick back on the podcast to explain it all to all of you. Quick disclaimer before we jump in, though, is that the information shared by Rick today is intended to be educational and not taken as therapeutic treatment.
Welcome back to Misconnections, Rick.
Oh, thank you.
Welcome. We're so happy you're back.
Good to be back. Thank you.
Yeah, we're so grateful to have you back on the podcast and to share with us this disconnection versus connection tool. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of the handout, can you explain what this handout is and when you typically utilize it during sessions with your clients?
Certainly. Quite often, this is something I develop, especially working with couples or within family systems. It could be a parent to a child, adult child, or whatever. It's a way of trying to help guide people on a little bit more on the behavioral side of what's helpful at leading to connection and what quite often ends up leading to disconnection, even though that often isn't the attempt. Like, I'm trying to repair with you, but then I say things to you, whether it's in tone or the inferences of the meanings, that actually would lead you to a more defensive place because of how I'm saying it or what I'm saying. And so these are more behavioral. And quite often I use this in the latter part of the work I do with, let's say, for example, with couples, because when they first come in, the cycle of interaction is too defended. And then I'm trying to help to foster more secure ways of engaging with each other. And then when we get into the problem solving, which is usually what people are looking for, is they're trying to solve their problems, but they do it in a system that doesn't solve problems, it creates more. So this quite often is in the latter part of helping them to kind of reframe, or I hear what you're trying to say, but this would be a better way of getting to the primary issue is this way. So this is quite often in the latter part of my work when I'm working with couples or within repair systems of relationships.
Yeah, I think that cycle is something that we can probably all really relate to. And it's funny, as you're describing that, I'm like feeling exhausted, just like understanding what that feels like, which is why I think we were such big fans of this tool when you showed it to us previously and how it was so helpful to just walk through and get the comparison for each section of what type of communication would move toward disconnection, what type of communication in that same objective would move toward connection. And so we would love if you would actually just walk us through this handout and, you know, share these different points with our listeners the same way that you shared them with us previously.
Yeah. Well, obviously as humans, the challenge would be is that we can be in different states of being where we're more able to be more complex or more reflective. And so quite often, sometimes it's really important that we're kind of listening to our own bodies for what kind of signals our bodies are sending. Because if my body's sending a signal of run for your life or fight to the death, I'm not going to do any of the connecting things. I'm going to survive.
Sure.
So there is an important nuance to be aware of. Can we listen to what our body's doing? Like, is my heart pounding? Is my jaw clenched? Where's adrenaline and cortisol running through my system right now? Yeah. Or am I flat? Am I, I'm not even present with you almost. Those are key things that are almost like an important beginnings before you even move into that. So there is some kind of a somatic or bodily awareness that can really be helpful in self and co-regulating both. But the first one is just briefly was distinguished between reflective listening and interpretive listening is quite often in a disagreement, you could say something to me and I will interpret it. I'll turn it up even more than what you've said. Mm. So I'm doing what's interpretive listening. So if I said, hey, I thought the chicken was a little salty, and you go, so you're telling me I'm a horrible cook. that is interpretive listening.
Yeah.
So versus reflective listening is we're trying to reflect back. We do tend to stay in more of our prefrontal cortex when we are more meta-perspective, meta-thinking. So quite often in reflective listening is where we're just practicing just to reflect back what a person is saying. At the same time, I'm trying to help to coach the other person to be aware of what they're saying, because if I load you with, I feel like you're so selfish, then as the person sharing, I'm undermining the potential for connection as well.
Sure.
So that's an important piece. But interpretive and reflective listening is trying to reflect back not only what was said, and it doesn't have to be exact, but almost in the tone of it. If you shared something very caringly, and I repeat it back. So what I'm hearing you say is blah, 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 blah. Even if I said the exact words you said, it would feel injurious because it feels like I'm mocking you in a way. So tone is really an important part of that as well. Abstract concrete thinking would be, in concrete thinking is the language we hear always of, and I just said it, you always, you never,
mm-hmm. yeah,
kind of thing. And I've worked with couples where they go, I know I'm not supposed to say always, but most of the time.
But you know what I mean by most of the time, don't you?
Right.
Wink, wink.
Yeah. So abstract thinking, again, is something that requires greater awareness or work, that I could go, last night, I felt unloved. I know you love me, and I know that we have, I know we have work to do or whatever. We can speak about an injury or we can speak about an experience, but can we make it be a little bit more situational than global? Global language is quite often dualistic or concrete in its thinking. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm the one that always has to say, I'm sorry. In there is a request to say, I'm sorry, but it's laden with the concrete thinking around what fosters an apology occurring. So concrete thinking is quite often in a defended place, whereas abstract thinking is where I can go, that hurt, but I also know there's more to you than that hurt.
Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Content processing, emotional processing. I tease with clients that I'm working with, and I'll go, unless you want to pay me 24/7 to run a camera, I have no idea the content. You know, you said this. No, I didn't say that. Well, you slammed it. I didn't slam the door. You know, all of that is like a forensic timeline versus emotional processing. So when that happened, what did you feel?
Right. Yeah.
I felt alone. I felt unsafe. I felt unwanted. I can process better. We can process better around our emotional experience more than we're able to process around content. And I don't actually view that people are being dishonest. Most of the time, people are not being dishonest. They're just engaged in a system, and their filters of what they see and hear are very much activated. So to me, it's like it's much easier if we can do more emotional processing than content processing. We can get lost in that, for sure.
Yeah, I had a therapist who once said, don't argue the facts, which I always felt was really helpful of like, it doesn't, the facts actually aren't what matters here. What matters is how you felt around those, what you see as the facts. And so maybe to try to communicate that instead of get to the nitty gritty of, likely if the facts changed, even your feelings might still be similar. So don't go with the facts, go with the feelings.
Very good. Very true.
And it makes me think of like, what's more important, winning or connecting?
Yeah.
Oh, you have that on my, you're very good. That's the down the line there. Win, lose, outcome versus connection. You know? And that's, I always lose, you always win, indicates that we're not heading in the right direction.
Yeah.
But when we go, but our reason for this conversation is for us to connect, for us to heal, for us to have a deeper understanding versus like the idea of winning and losing. So,
I don't have to review that one.
There you go. Good. Yeah. But that is an important frame. Why are we having this conversation? Mm-hmm. To prove my point or to connect?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Excellent. The attachment is such a big thing and as it relates to in psychology, something that really has been studied for probably closer to about 70 years or so. The original John Bowlby was the one that developed attachment theory. The idea of attachment is that insecure avoidance strategies versus a more secure attachment. And what I mean by that is an insecure attachment is usually someone who's longing for attachment, but they normally incorporate a criticism in the request. I used that example earlier. Like if I said to you, why am I the one that always has to say I'm sorry first? Technically, I'm longing for connection, but I've also laden it with an accusation as well. Mm-hmm. And when we operate from an insecure attachment, we typically will request attachment, but it's usually laden with something that's difficult to attach to. Mm-hmm.
So that would be more of a moving toward the disconnection side of the chart, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. And then the other form of insecure attachment or anxious attachment would be an avoidant attachment style. Typically, these come in ideas that I won't even bring up the longing that I have. I do have it going on in my own mind. I'd really love for us to repair. I'd really love for us to. I have about 25 conversations, but I know you won't. And then I finally work up the nerve to say, I'd really love for us to prepare. And you're in a moment where you're not ready for that. Or, you know, something's going on that's just external. It's not a big deal. And you go, I'm not ready now, but I will be in a little bit. And I go, I knew it. And you're going, excuse me, Rick, I'm sorry I wasn't available in that moment of time, but I could be. But you're dealing with one request. I'm dealing with 26 rejections.
Yeah.
So the energy of that quite often with avoidant attachment is the longing doesn't get expressed. And when it finally does, there's little room for tolerance of it not being enacted upon. That's usually what comes with an avoidant attachment. And that, again, is something we don't ask for what we want. The connecting style is secure attachment. I do frame that in the idea of in a reciprocal relationship, romantic, partner to partner, sibling to sibling, kind of environment where there's not power structures to them.
Sure, sure.
Is that I really would encourage it to be what I call an adult secure attachment. Secure attachment could be as like the child says, mommy hold me, daddy play with me, see me now. And it's age appropriate narcissism, okay? So, but it is age appropriate. It's reasonable. Mm-hmm. So children ask for what they want. As an adult, how I nuance this is that in an adult secure attachment, we're both responsible. We're both participants. We both have needs, and we also need to be curious about the needs of our partner. Mm-hmm. And so in an adult secure attachment, we're trying to discover and share what we long for while we're also curious about the other person's needs and or their willingness to participate in that longing. And as long as they're safe psychologically, physically, or whatever, then we're trying to explore what that would look like. And that to me is a more of an adult secure attachment. So we're stepping into an environment where we are asking for what we long for while we're also holding to the curiosity of our partner's needs as well. Hmm. And to me, that's there's an important shift there. There's
tricky,
a lot
tricky.
Of great country. And, yeah, tricky, tricky. A lot of great country rock and roll songs like I Will Always Love You. Great song. But it sounds more like childhood secure attachment rather than adult secure attachment.
Yeah. Okay.
So I wished I wrote the song.
Yeah, I love that point because when we were talking last time, you were like, a lot of romantic songs, the biggest hits, are really not healthy.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine that.
I listened quite often to songs and I'll go, psychologically, I'm questioning that one. Great, beautiful song, beautiful lyric.
Yeah.
Wished I'd have thought about it, but psychologically,
along,
but... it doesn't work. Yeah. Next one was triangulation versus reciprocity. And triangulation, it's not unusual that we bring someone into this conflict. Even your friends tell me that you are X, you know, our children tell me this or that sort of thing. So we find ourselves triangulating somebody else into the relational dynamic. That undermines the potential for connection. Because now we've brought somebody else in that's holding that energy. It just doesn't foster connection when we're triangulating into things.
When it also feels like the triangulation is a way to get around owning your own feelings and needs too. So kind of similar to what you were just saying about the, you know, insecure avoidant attachment and the secure attachment, and how the difference I heard between those two was like kind of how are you able to own your feelings and needs and like directly communicate them. And so the triangulation feels like a coping device for like, I want to get my point across and I want you to validate it. So I'm going to bring in something else to add more, you know, oomph to that request.
I also think like the triangulation kind of like setup does not foster at all the nervous system to be in the parasympathetic. Everybody, regardless if they're being teamed up against or the one that's kind of orchestrating, everybody's going to be in the flight, fight, or freeze state in that situation, you know? And so there's going to be a lot of somatic factors along that's causing even further disconnection with also the communication that way.
Yes, that is so true that it typically activates either our mobile defense system, which would be our fight flight. There's a movement towards you, usually with anger or fear, or a movement from you with anger or fear, or it activates our freeze system, which is more of a collapse state. Kind of like if you're going to get eaten alive, it's just best not to feel it. So we collapse. They don't foster regulation, for sure. Plus, we brought someone else in. It's almost like we've let the world vote and we all agree that you're a problem.
Compelling.
Yes. I have compelling evidence.
Boning a friend.
Whereas reciprocity is really just that idea of that I come to you with my needs, but I also come to you with my hurts, and you come to me with your needs, you come to me with your hurts. We bring it there. And quite often, again, with couples, when I'm working with them, is you often find that they have triangulated one of their children into the relationship is not uncommon. And then that fosters a different system because our children are not in a reciprocal system. They're in a system where they're a participant in it, not a voter in it in a way. They just have to find a way to live in it. And now they are being held responsible for someone else's emotional state of being in a way. And it fosters perfectionism, anxiety, rebellion, whatever. There's all kinds of choices that we'll take. It's not fair. Quite often couples, when they come in, they're more talking about, initially they want to talk about the problems they have in their relationship. So the this other one is solution or problem focused. And quite often what I want to do is, what is it that you long for? What is it that you're hoping to have happen in our time? And it's so funny because quite often you'll find somebody maybe gets about a half a sentence in and then they shift into the problem instead. So it's really hard to go, what is it that you want? What would this look like if you envision this to be a healthy relationship? What would it be? What are your contributions to that? What would you want to do differently? So we're looking at solutions rather than problem focused. You know, when we have questions like, how come you always fill in the blank, we're trying to get a strategy more from a problem than from a solution. I'd really love for us to fill in the blank would be more solution focused. So trying to seek out what's the solution, and then we can explore what are the problems that prevent it from occurring.
And maybe gain like a similar vision that you can align on to then go back to work through some of the blocks to get there versus like talking around all of the blocks and not having like an aligned vision for what the longing is.
I'm trying to find common ground. It's not uncommon with couples, especially, is that they initially talk about how much we have in common and do not recognize how different they actually are. And sometimes we'll get to the space where in couples that are in more conflict, they will kind of view our differences as the reason we shouldn't be together rather than our diversity is what makes us strong. And again, that's outside of imbalance, things that can happen in relationships. But the diversity helps us be more well-rounded rather than, you know, there's a Rick and a mini-me Rick. that doesn't sound too fun.
No. Fair.
We already talked about win-lose and connection outcome. One of my favorites, and it's part of the human condition, is a lot of my work is trying to deal with the unconscious. One of I think it's Carl Jung made a statement, early psychologist said, unless we bring our unconscious beliefs to conscious awareness, they'll rule our lives, but we'll just call them fate. Mm-hmm. And I think as humans, we are 24/7 meaning-making machines. Our dreams are almost like golden roads to the unconscious. To me, as humans, when we bump into experiences, we do have feelings, but we tend to shift pretty quickly into making meanings out of those experiences.
Oh, sure.
And so when I lead with, I feel like you don't care about me. Okay. Yeah. Probably I have had experiences, you've had experiences with me where I was uncaring of you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's real easy to make meanings like you don't care about me. And we even put the word feel in the sentence. So it feels like I'm using a feeling statement, but I'm actually not. I'm giving you a meaning statement.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that is so tricky.
It is.
I feel like a lot of people make those type of meaning statements mm-hmm. where they think they're speaking out of feeling.
Yeah, it is. It's one of the things that, again, I work a lot with couples, helping them to reframe. Yeah. Because I don't want to bypass an injury where you felt uncared for or felt alone or unwanted or unsafe or whatever it was. But when we make the globalization statement again around the idea of a feeling, but it's actually a meaning. And mm-hmm. one of my little axioms that I've developed is I say I'm trying to help people to learn how to validate feelings but negotiate meanings.
Sure.
So that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
If someone were to say, I feel like you don't love me, I've used the word feel in it, we're using a feel statement, but what is the other person's option? They go, you're right, I don't love you. Or they try to prove why they do love that person, and that doesn't usually translate well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if we're able to identify feelings but negotiate the meanings that we're moving towards, then we have more of a potential of fostering connection.
Right. I feel like the meanings piece of that is often based on, like, at least I can speak for myself, like my own experience, where when I have encountered something like this or felt something like this, I've learned it means this, but that doesn't necessarily apply.
Yes.
To you. And it's not necessarily fair for you to inherit that meaning. So the only thing that
yes.
can be true is like what I feel in the actual feeling sense and not the meaning I've made of those feelings in that moment either.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, Lizzie. And quite often, I mean, again, we've grown up in one structure, and that doesn't mean that structure doesn't have healthiness in it, but it also can foster pain as well. It's part of the human experience, both, is that we grow up in one structure where we have to learn how to navigate in a system that we don't get to negotiate. And then we create a relational system where we're actually participants in. I distinguish between what I would call the first one would be a vertical relationship, adult to child. Mm-hmm. And then we have a horizontal relationship, partner to partner. And quite often we bring our survival strategies into our partnerships, and they don't translate well to either one because yeah. we've had those experiences previously. But it's in a different system, and then those survival strategies just don't translate well. And so meanings quite often have been bumped into because we've experienced those in other relationships. And then when we have those experiences, we bring the meanings of those experiences from previous. And sometimes I'm going, I think you think you're talking to your partner, but I actually think you're talking to your father right now or your mother or whatever.
Yeah, that really reminds me of the Showtime show called Couples Therapy, right? So it's actually real therapy happening, but I think it's one of the most poignant examples that we as the population can witness, that sort of like bringing the vertical into the horizontal, mm-hmm. because more often than not, the therapist that is navigating the therapy is saying, okay, but let's go back to
yes,
your childhood and find out where this like source of conflict and miscommunication is occurring from your childhood, which mm-hmm. I have found to be really interesting to watch and learn from.
Yes, that is so true. And yes, sometimes when someone will have a really strong emotional response of something, like you always do this to me, whatever this is, What I often will do is I will want to try to slow that down to go, this seems to be such a strong experience that I'm imagining you've experienced it for. Mm-hmm. Let's say somebody said something, you've never been there for me. I want you to, before you ever laid eyes on your partner, I want you, if you can, to recall a moment of time when you would have believed that before, that you, mm-hmm. someone, parent, whoever, previous partner, whatever, you've never been there for me. When did you experience that before? Sure. And quite often the energy is long before, as a couple, they've ever even met each other.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. So that again, that feelings, meanings thing is, it's really easy to get to meanings because we've experienced them over and over again. If we can find a way to go, again, it's kind of throws in the abstract thinking is that I felt unheard, but I know you care. I'm being more abstract, but I am also leading with a feeling rather than telling you the non-negotiable truth about what has gone on.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yep.
And the last one is the inside of partner, inside of self or us. You know, when I point out to you your deficits, like we're doing much better now that she is behaving herself.
Oh, God.
Okay. Sounds like I'm being complimentary.
Oh, that's a loaded statement.
Yeah. So when I bring the inside of partner, it actually leads towards disconnection. When I can go, you know, when we parent our kids, sometimes either one of us can be impatient with our child. It's the discovery of us. Or I go, you know, there's times I've been impatient when I've been disciplining our child. The inside of me, the inside of us has a potential work. The inside of the other usually does foster disconnection.
Yeah. What strikes me about this list is how nuanced it can be, because it's not like many people just talk from one point that you've pointed out. It's usually like three or four stacked upon one another. And so to like break that apart and try to source the connection side of communication with all these different nuances is something to be worked on and practiced.
Yeah. It's a math problem.
That's so true. I love to use humor when it's appropriate. And there'll be a time maybe with a couple that I've been working with, and I'll go, okay, so I want you to look at our little list. I've got a handwritten one up on my wall here. Mm-hmm. I want you to look at our little list, and which of those do you see that you were doing that probably led more to disconnection? And there have been a couple of times I'm going to give you an A+ for all of your disconnections. You've done them, almost all of them. That was amazing. I wonder if we can reframe that.
Yeah, we need to make a bingo card or something like that. One side is disconnection. The other side is connection. Can you get 5 in a row?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. Wow. And I think we've already kind of...
bingo or bango.
Yeah. I think we've already kind of hit on this already, but just in case there's any that you want to point out specifically in terms of which, if there's a line on this chart of the two, you know, sides compared that you think is the most valuable when a relationship is able to integrate it, and then which do you find is kind of the trickiest to be used to be integrated?
Probably in the earlier work, things such as an approach of outcome as being a connection versus winning and losing, mm-hmm. To me can be really important. Early on, I do try to bring people into being able to do emotional processing rather than content processing.
Sure.
Because again, it can be really a trap to try to content process. There are some exceptions when there's some severity of psychology in a way, but I just hold the vast majority of people are not being dishonest. They're just sharing their lens of perspective, of experience, in a way, of something that happens. So the idea of content processing is secondary to emotional processing. Those are a couple of things that I think can be really helpful. Mm-hmm. As it relates to once we're able to, like you were mentioning earlier, Beth, on this kind of ho and self-regulating around our sympathetic and parasympathetic system, I do believe that things like especially reflective listening, abstract thinking, leading with feelings are three significant concepts that I'm trying to help guide people through, so that when they're having conversations, they're able to be in what would be more of a meta perspective. And I don't, you know, we just can't be in a meta perspective if we're running from the saber-toothed tiger. We're just running for our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It wouldn't be a good idea.
No. Well, I tease with people, whether I'm doing individual work with couples as it relates to that sympathetic response, fight flight response, is if you're being chased by if you're being chased down a dark alley, if you're being chased by a saber-toothed tiger, do not stop and breathe. Do not reflect. Just run. It's okay. That's what it was designed for. But sometimes our limbic system can't tell the difference between the saber-toothed tiger and the partner that we are in love with, in a way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you hand out this tool to your client, like I'm sure you resource this throughout your sessions, but let's say you like hand out the piece of paper like you gave to us, like how do you recommend people integrate it into their daily lives? Because like when I look at this paper, I feel like I need exposure. Like I need to post it on my refrigerator and in my bathroom mirror and like just basically be able to like see it throughout the day to like help me reframe my mind. But I'm just curious to like how you communicate that with your clients.
Yeah. Well, I think I've shared this quote previously as well, but I love Richard Rohr, R-O-H-R, and he says, we don't think our way into a new way of living. We live our way into a new way of thinking. And I love that. I really embrace that process. So to me, there's something about being able to take reflective moments, because I think we can access those. We don't always access them when we're in a state of survival, for sure, but we can take reflective moments and revisit something and go, I'd like to do this differently, or I'd like to think this differently, whether that's just in my intra-self or it's in interpersonal relationships that I can come back. And again, it's a lot better if I go, you know what, I just did an always never for you. I want to take that back. That's not okay. Versus you telling me, Rick, you just did an always never.
Yeah.
Because again, you're trying to point out something, but you're using the insight of the other. So it's a lot better. There might be a way to go, hey, I'm wondering if you could say that differently. That might be helpful that I'll do with couples. But when I can go, you know what, I did the always never thing, or I told you what you were doing. That's not okay. So I'm creating an awareness. And when I engage in those repairing experiences, it does help to reinforce the attachment in the relationship. So I do find it's just helpful to be able to reflect on it throughout the day. And it may be, sometimes it can be in a relationship that really you don't have much skin in the game. You can find yourself, well, that guy's a so-and-so or whatever. We can find ourselves saying or doing things that we don't have to almost be accountable for because we're really not even in that relationship. But how do I let that person be human that I don't even know? This, I think, is really important that we can do that, let alone when there's a whole lot more attachments in a relationship with someone that we care about and long to be cared for.
Yeah. Yeah. Really good practice to just kind of continually reframe some of those ways that we communicate and even think about others. I feel like for our listeners who are maybe hearing this and it's one side of a relationship, would it be, do you think, advisable to them, or not advisable, but helpful tip, I guess, to be able to just like bring it to their partner and say, hey, I learned about this type of communicating. It's something I think I'm going to start working on to help us in our connection. Is that something that we can start kind of put it on the table so we have a little bit of shared language about how we're going to try to continue to grow in our relationship? Like, how do you think about kind of bringing a concept like this to a partner, to someone that you're in a relationship with?
Yeah, as what you were sharing there, Lizzie, would be a combination of things that are on the connection side. Is like, because there's solution focus, there's, I would suggest, secure attachment request, you know, abstract thinking. So there are a number of things there that were the intent to connect rather than win-lose. So those are all good factors that could help to influence a connection. Sometimes if our partner doesn't have any of those experiences, then it's almost like we're playing rules from two different games. And our insight actually isn't as helpful unless we can find ways to let this be part of our common ground. So it might be encouraging them to listen to the podcast or something along those lines to say, here's something that I found really helpful. I'd love for you to listen to it. and let's talk about this. And maybe this is a way for us to kind of work through sometimes when we get more disconnected. Mm-hmm. I'd love for us to explore that. So to me, that could be a helpful way for sure.
Mm. Connect while listening to Misconnections. There we go.
Yes. Well, Rick, we just want to thank you so much for your time today and just walking us through this handout and tools. I'm sure some light bulbs were going off today as they were listening. So
yeah,
we appreciate your insight.
Yes, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. And thank you so much for all of the work you both do. Thank you so much. I was honored to be able to spend some time with the two of you, for sure.
We'll continue calling, so. Thank you so much to Rick Jackson for coming back on the podcast and for sharing more amazing insights. We've learned so much. If you're interested in working with Rick, please check out LaVie Counseling Center. The website is linked in this minisode's show notes. We'll also be posting the disconnection versus connection tool on our socials so you can reference it when you're looking to create a better connection in your relationships.
So what did you all think of the disconnection versus connection tool? What connection point do you need to be more mindful of? We'd love to hear from you, so please keep sharing your thoughts, questions, and stories with us. Email us at elizabeth@missedconnectionspod.com or send us a message on Instagram or TikTok at Missed Connections Podcast. This is Miss Connections. Thanks for listening. I'm Elizabeth Windham.
And I'm Elizabeth Villa. Special thanks to our guest, Rick Jackson.
Miss Connections is co-hosted, produced, and edited by us, the Elizabeths, Elizabeth Villa and Elizabeth Windham.
Our theme music is Feeling by Daniil Musto.
Have a Miss Connections story to share with us? Email us at elizabeths@missedconnectionspod.com.
And please follow, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube.